Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody. Ooh. Obviously, Charlotte Ray has joined us today. Girls!
I was doing more of a Halloween thing.
Oh, but wasn't she in your favorite thing? The witch? The worst witch?
Oh, man, Tim Curry? Rob, you know what you have to do, everybody, right now. Just please, just go on YouTube, type in Tim Curry, watch the song that was written by Charles Strauss, lest we forget. Creepy! it's just The Worst Witch. It's his song from that. Oh, my God. I just watched it the other day, Rob. It's like a perennial thing. It's just amazing. It's so horrible and amazing.
You know what?
Anything can happen on Halloween. Your dog could turn into a cat. Huh.
Really? That's a rhyme scheme.
Really, Don Black? Okay, all right, enough of that. Yeah, so happy Halloween, everybody, because it'll be November 1st when we have our next podcast.
Is that true?
Since I'm married to somebody who is completely obsessed with Halloween, and I've told you guys all before that I, you know, used to not love horror films, and of course, they are played every day, all day, every genre, all genres. We watch the Eli Roth TV show about slasher film. I mean, it's like everything. And you know what? I've gotten used to it and I'm kind of into it, but so now it's trickled into our podcast. So
that's please don't do that again. It scares me. Okay.
I'll stop. Sorry.
My brother and my mother are huge horror fans. They love horror movies. Oh. They're watching like the top 100. Like AFI had a list of like the top 100 horror films, and all throughout October they literally watch them.
I'll go tell Sutton that. That's great. I'm sure she can check off probably half of them.
I was going to say they probably can like confirm.
But we go through everything. I mean, all the genres. I mean, we watch Cabin Fever, which is like a horrible like 90s one. And the funny thing is a lot of them I've actually seen. I don't know why, but high school, I don't know. But I tend to like the 70s, 80s ones because you can at least appreciate the gore and it's more our artistry than the actual. I don't like things jumping out at me. But I'm just going to be honest. Something happened in my fight or flight thing, Rob, and
you run
it happens anywhere. I've had a roommate here and I go to the bathroom and they come out of their door at the same time. Oh, I'm like on the floor, I'm a mess. So
that's absolutely terrifying.
I'm not so good at so I don't like the films when they do that, but what are you gonna say? You gotta watch a little Paranormal Activity sometimes.
And I think the scariest thing is just simply gonna be, you know, Charles Strauss's what's it called? Worst Witch?
Type in anything can happen on Halloween. Tim Curry, you guys, you're welcome. That's all I'm going to say.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Go back and look what's a favorite thing a year ago, and it's always going to be a favorite thing in my heart. It's unbelievable that they spent any time at all with the effects, the CGI. It's just so good.
It looks like really bad public access with that green screen on it.
Exactly.
I must tell you, speaking of fight or flight, a plane almost landed on me yesterday.
Please tell the story, Rob.
If anyone's interested.
Just take your time, and because it really is unbelievable what happened.
And it made the news, apparently, back east.
I remember it happened. Yeah.
Okay. So yesterday, very excited. We got to interview the great Carol Cook, 94 years old, 94 years old.
Yeah.
And she was kind enough to let us like come into her home in Beverly Hills to interview her. So I'm driving on the freeway yesterday out here in California, and luckily there's not a lot of cars. And I see in the distance, I go, that's a really low flying plane. Why is that plane so low flying? And then I'm noticing it's getting closer and closer and closer. And I go, I can see the pilot's eyes. That's not usually a good sign in terms of aviation, that I can see the pilot's eyes. The plane was about 20 feet over my car and crash landed. And then luckily the guy got out and it burst into flames. I could have been killed. My life flashed before my eyes. And you know what, Kevin? Biggest regret? I didn't buy tickets to Tootsie.
Not yet.
Not yet. So I went home last night. I bought tickets to Tootsie.
Newfound lease on life.
I was like, you know, you cannot wait. You cannot wait.
It's going to be sold out, so you might as well.
Might as well do it now. But and it burst into flames. And then we found out it was a World War II Nazi fighter plane that a guy had refurbished and was flying to a local airport, and it just went down. So I was almost killed by a Nazi fighter plane.
I have no words for that part of the story.
And then I got some words, because then on the way back from Carol's house, which is – this interview is amazing, by the way. We're going to not release it next week, the week after. Take a listen to it, because it is epic. She's 94 years old. First of all –
feisty. She is so with it and so – like everything was there. I mean, her memory is insane, Rob.
She sat on the sofa. We went for 2 hours. 2 hours. And at one point, she was just amazing. She never flagged. Her energy never flags. She is incredible. She has great stories. She clarified a couple of great stories that we've heard before on this podcast. I'm going to just...
Unreal. Unreal, you guys.
It was good. It was a good, good time was had by all. But anyway, then driving back, because the thing happened on the freeway, it took me to drive 15 miles, just 15 miles, 4.5 hours.
Oh, you should have taken a plane. Sorry.
You should have flown. You should have flown. Anyway.
Oh, but, man, Rob, that's insane.
Yes. Anyway,
LA.
I'm fine. Hey, LA. Oh, my God. You know what I did? And it was so cool. And I wanted this to be a favorite thing, but I just we can't make it a favorite thing because nobody has access to it. Our good friend and listener, John Moss, took me for the first time to the Paley Center.
Oh, wow.
And there's a Paley Center in New York and a Paley Center in Los Angeles. And for those of you that don't know, it is the Museum of Television and Radio. And you can go and watch pretty much any program that's ever been on television. So he took me to see a special from Yves Montand, the French singer, who did a Broadway review for it's a television show that was an hour-long special film from New York.
Okay.
And the cast was John Raitt and Polly Bergen and Bobby Van and Helen Gallagher.
Oh, what a
And
great.
It was so much fun. Unfortunately, it's not on YouTube. You only can watch it at the Paley Center. I would encourage everybody, if you get down to the Paley Center, take a look at it because it was amazing.
What's it called again?
Oh, shoot. John's yelling at me right now.
Sorry, sorry, John. Sorry, Rob. Sorry.
It was the singer Yves Montand, the French singer. And it was like Yves Montand on Broadway or something like that. Then we watched a George Abbott special. They did a George Abbott tribute. Which was incredible as well. So anyway, I would love to recommend these to people, but I can't because you can't go and watch
them. You're in LA or New York City, yeah, go to absolutely. Or if you're ever traveling to those places, go to the Paley Center. And it's
free.
Now, how much do you have? Thank you. It's like
free.
It's like you're in my mind, Rob. It's like
I am your mind. That was my James Naughton line reading from City of Angels. I hope you liked it.
You know, what a nice date. That's a good no, I'm serious. Like take a friend and go to the Paley Center, and because you can watch together, right?
Yeah, John and I watched together.
I think that's pretty cool.
It was really cool. And they've got so many great things there. So please, please go and check them out. And there's a wonderful individual named Jane Klein, whose job it is to get all of these live performances that were recorded. And we want her on the show so bad.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure she's got stories. And she's like a hound dog, you know, looking and snooping in every corner until she can find what she needs. So anyway, go down there. That's what I wanted my favorite thing to be, and that's not going to be it. But
that's right.
Because who can see, Kevin? Who can see it? Who can see it? Do you have Christmas lights up in your house?
Yeah, well, they're just for ambiance. We're on Skype right now, you guys.
I'm Skyping
like
the man.
They were put up 1 year, and then I think – I don't love overhead lights, full disclosure. Yeah. I hate overhead lights. So they just add a nice – light without having too much light in the bedroom. So
I got dimmers. I did dimmers. Every room
You're
in my house.
Fancy.
Real fancy. Oh. Every room in my house has a dimmer because I'm like, I don't like overhead lighting either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome back to the overhead lighting podcast.
Good chat. Good chat.
Good chat, everybody. Good chat. Hey, how was your gala, man? It was everywhere.
Very quickly, yes. The Closer Than Ever I did on Monday night. We talked about it last week. It was fantastic. It was for a benefit for the Abington Theater Group, which is off-Broadway theater company that does new works. We last year we did And the World Goes Round to honor B.B. Newworth. And so they basically pick a Broadway star of some kind and honor them. And so, Rob, you'll be maybe next year. Keep your fingers crossed. You never know. But we honored Donna Murphy this year. And we chose Closer Than Ever. It was one of her shows that she had actually auditioned for in 1989. Didn't book it, but but she has a connection to it, like so many people do. A lot of people grew up singing these songs in college, and it's just a show that really has spoken to a lot of people in our business. And it was a really wonderful night. Maltby and Shire were both there in attendance, and it was a very special evening. Liz Calloway sang Patterns, Julia killed Miss Bird, but Leslie Margarita singing You Want to Be My Friend. I'm my sides hurt because I'm laughing so hard. She's so freaking funny. And it was just, all the songs were so well cast that it was great to see individual, you know, when you do the show, it's four singers, they sing all of the songs, right? But it was really fun to see people that were sort of like perfectly cast for each song, you know, like Nikki Daniels and Jeff Creedy. I was playing the introduction and he's like, these lyrics I'm going to say, this actually happened. I was married before. And this is like, they sang the married song. And it was just really a sweet evening and it was a success. And I was
are they
really
a couple?
Proud to be a part of it. Oh yeah. They've been, fun fact, they are married. They've been together 10 years because when I did the first revival of Les Mis, me, Nikki, Jeff, I think sometimes Alex Gemignani, who was Valjean, Leia Salonga, every single two-show day, five or six of us would play poker in the men's dressing room. And during those poker games, we watched Nikki and Jeff fall in love.
Oh, like, that's so sweet.
Yeah. And now they've got two kids, and yeah, it's pretty cool. So
they have, as you would say in poker, couples. A full house.
God bless you, Rob Schneider.
Thank you for that.
Thank you guys. It was a really, really fun evening. And I have just a whole new appreciation for the music of David Shire. And I even, I was talking to him when we were doing some of the stuff. And I was like, you know, when you play someone's music, Rob, you really, it's so cheesy and nerdy, but like I felt his hands. Like he has got huge hands, and all of the chords you have to stretch over an octave. I mean, he's to get really technical with you listeners, but you don't usually play that way in theater music. And you can just, his is unlike any other composer that I've ever played. And I played his songs before, but never really dug into them like I did with this show. And it was amazing. It was just really fun to get to appreciate him more than I knew that I did.
Do you get nervous when you're playing in front of a composer, their work?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
He's such a kind guy. They're both so kind.
Only before. Yeah, they're so sweet. But during, no. When I'm playing, it's just this weird sort of dance with the singer. I'm only focused on what they're doing. It's a weird, I can't even describe what it's like, but it's the most euphoric, amazing feeling when it's good material and a great singer and they're telling the story the way it's supposed to be told. It's fun.
That's really lovely. That's beautiful.
Okay. So anyway, favorite things. Hey, everybody.
Oh, my God.
Welcome
favorite
back.
Things.
Rob, what's your favorite thing?
Well, Kevin, So I had an idea for a favorite thing, and I started doing research on it, and I'm like, no, this is too geeky even for everybody out there.
After what I just said?
So I switched, but I will tell you what my first one was going to be.
What was it?
No, Kevin, because I was like, people are going to literally shut this off. People are literally going to hit unsubscribe after they hear me talk about this. So I used to collect stamps. Kevin has dropped the mic and has looked away.
Sorry, I fell asleep for a minute. I'm sorry, Rob. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What'd you say? Did you say you?
I used to collect stamps. I was known as a Flatic.
Stamp collector.
Well, we have names. We have a more official name than the street terminology that you use. Sometimes we are called philatelists. Sometimes we are called stamp collectors. Sometimes we are called, I should have used a condom. That's for you, Dad. He's waving to me right now.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Agreeing. I used to collect stamps, and I don't know. I was like high school. I stopped because I was like, this was crazy.
Yeah.
And wow. But one of the things I love doing, this is so stupid, one of the things that I love is at the end of the year, the stamp, the U.S. Postal Service comes out with a commemorative book of all the stamps that they've issued in the year. And they give you the stamp and they give you all this history on like how the stamp was created and like who's featured in the stamp and all that stuff. Oh. And so I have all these books back at my parents' house in California. And so I was flipping through some of them and so many of the in totality, 800 individuals have been featured and celebrated on U.S. postage stamps since the first stamp came out.
Fun fact.
And I was flipping through. I was like, I wonder how many of them were theater performers. So I started like counting and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. But then I'm like, how do I get this across to everybody? Your eyes have glazed over. So I think I know where this is going.
No, this is basically the favorite thing. I mean, at this point.
But no, what I was going to do is going to be like, oh my God, like, you know, you should, because I think postage stamps are mini works of art. I really do.
Oh, definitely.
And so my feeling was I was going to recommend to people, if you could find any of these stamps and like blow them up, you could make them posters on your wall or you could make them on a t-shirt or something. That's very interesting. In 1993, the U.S. Postal Service came out. Wake him up. David Shire's here. Came out with a set of four stamps.
Yeah.
And they celebrated four seminal American musicals. American musicals.
What year was this again?
1993. Four musicals were featured?
Well, obviously Oklahoma.
Very good.
Showboat.
Yeah, very good.
I'm going to go out and maybe, because this is a chorus line maybe.
No.
Oh, shit. Gypsy.
No.
West Side Story.
Nope.
Music Man.
No. Earlier.
Hello, Dolly. Oh, no. Anything Goes.
No. One of them's the 30s. One of them is the 50s.
Okay. My Fair Lady.
Yeah, that's three. And good. The one from the 30s was?
The one from the 30s. This one's Gershwin?
It's a Gershwin.
Yeah, is it Porgy and Bess?
Very good.
That's a very diverse, amazing. That was 1990 what?
Three.
Wow.
So anyway, and then the next year they came out with like an Ethel Merman stamp. So I was going to do that. But then I'm like, there's no way I can do this. I'm going to tell you what my favorite thing is. But before I do that, I'm going to ask you one question. Little bit of trivia. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
How many years must a person be deceased before they can be considered to be appearing on a U.S. postage stamp? How many years?
First of all, did not know that. You had to be a couple years.
You have to be deceased before you're featured on a postage stamp. How
Let's
many
say
years?
25. Let's say 25.
Okay, three. Three. So it's going to be three, yeah.
So obviously I don't collect the stamps.
Postage stamps. So anyway, my advice to you is take a look. Oh my God, they also did an American composers one that featured like Rodgers and Hammerstein and Meredith Wilson. It's like Meredith Wilson, like why did he get a stamp?
That great composer, yeah.
It's like he only did one show.
It took him a long couple years to write one show and then...
And I don't want to hear emails.
Here's love.
I don't want to get tweets from people being like that or unsinkable Molly Brown too, right?
Oh yeah, that too. Yeah
I don't want to hear that shit, people. It's Music Man, and that's all he did. So nobody bothered with anything. So anyway, so my favorite thing this week actually was suggested by a listener who reached out to us via the Facebook. His name is Jeff Martin, who lives in Chicago. And Jeff Martin recommended this one to me. And I'm like, what a great idea for a favorite thing. So it's an album, my friend. It features something. It features something that we don't normally see in musicals anymore. What could that be? Used to be very big.
A harpsichord. Oh, I thought you meant orchestration.
How dare you laugh at me? How dare you laugh at me for my stamp collecting?
Something we don't and you just see, said like an in one number.
I should go back. It's something we don't hear in musicals so much anymore. That
overture.
Very good. It's overtures. You're so good.
Yeah.
And it is the overtures of who I think is the greatest Broadway composer who
Julie
ever
Stein.
Lived. It is. It's the overtures of Julie Stein.
A good album. That is an incredible album.
So for all of our friends, this is there's two volumes, by the way. The first one is called Everything's Coming Up Roses, the Overtures of Julie Stein, Volume 1, and it's conducted by the wonderful Jack Everly and the National Symphony Orchestra. It came out on J Records in 1994, and it's got all of Stein's great overtures on there. Gypsy, High Button Shoes, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, Two in the Aisle, Hazel Flag, Bells Are Ringing, Do-Re-Mi, Subwaves Are for Sleeping, Funny Girl, Fade Out, Fade In, Hallelujah Baby, and Sugar. Any one of those
no
alone...
No Hazel Flag, John Moss.
Any one of those could simply be brilliant in its own right. But the fact that it's all on one album, it's really, really marvelous. And
fully
not,
orchestrated.
Fully orchestrated. And I looked at this. I looked at the song list. I'm like, Volume 1? What the hell would be in Volume 2? Because I'm like, they covered everything. So Volume 2, my friends, which came out in 2000, has such hits as One Night Stand. Do you know One Night Stand? Literally ran, I think,
I
for one night,
I think I
ironically.
Isn't it an LP? I think I have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they made Bruce yeah. Yeko did one.
Yeah, if I ever get you over here, I'll show it to you, but it depends if I can ever get you here, so we'll see.
Okay. And the Darling of the Day overture. Actually, John Moss brought up a good point, which is if you listen to like Darling of the Day or the One Night Stand overture, you think like the show's going to be a big old hit, and it's not.
No. When I just a Rutledge, right? And Vincent
yeah,
Price, Darling of the Day?
Yeah. When I think of Broadway, though, and I think of composition, my mind always goes to Julie Stein.
Well, yes, but I have theories that his voice definitely changed based on who he was collaborating with, and that sometimes he needed a really good collaborator to really, like, really make him pop.
So you mean like
Hazel Flag? Sorry,
I don't even know who he did Hazel Flag with.
Oh, John's saying it right now, but it's like the only person he did pop songs really, and it's Yid shows. But it's I do know when you see like a Gypsy yeah. compared to Fade Out, Fade In, it's yes, you've got Betty Comden and Adolph Green on one, and then you've got Stephen Sondheim on the other. I think Gypsy pops because of Sondheim, and I think Fade Out, Fade In is maybe someday I'll do like a research paper on it. But I do think that Julie Stein's voice definitely changed based on who he was collaborating with.
How very interesting. Okay, well, now I'm going to listen to that a little bit more. Because I actually really like the Fade Out, Fade In overture.
I love Fade Out, Fade
And
In.
I think the Subwaves Are for Sleeping overture is pretty good as well. When they do that,
Reds, though.
What'd you say? Which one? Which one?
Reds. I'm kidding. It's a bad joke. The last show he wrote, Reds, in like the 90s.
Oh, you mean the Red Shoes?
Yeah, the Red Shoes. Sorry, Reds, not Reds, Kevin. See, I killed my own joke. Look
that's,
at that.
Hey, that's okay, man.
But only three people are listening right now, so that's okay. So that.
Yeah, but we just got 20,000 listeners from the Stamp Society.
Hey,
so. They're excited. So anyway, a big thanks to Jeff for recommending this to us. But it's the Overtures of Julie Stein, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Both are on Apple Music, and I think they're on Spotify as well. Yeah. So take a listen. Listen for free. I think it's amazing. What is on the second album as well, it's a lot of the overtures for the film versions, which were obviously different than what was in the theaters originally. So yeah. Anyway, that's it. And if you exercise, which I don't, I'm assuming it would be good to listen to while you're on a run.
Oh, yeah.
It's brassy and big. So that's my favorite thing. Kevin, what's yours?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Nice. I have a Halloween themed favorite thing.
Oh, damn it. I should have done a Halloween.
I know. Sorry.
Girls.
Yeah, so I have a movie.
Tootie.
And you could also listen to the soundtrack to this movie. And I had to look it up to see if we'd actually talked about this before, but I consider this a musical movie. I think you could consider it just a regular old movie. It is not a typical live action movie, which I'm sort of giving it away. It's a stop action movie. Made by a director, a writer who actually has given us a movie musical, which was Sweeney Todd.
So okay, so it's Tim Burton.
Yep.
Is it The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Oh, it certainly is, which I do consider to be a bridge to the Christmas holiday, but it's a Halloween film, and it is a musical. And I would like to celebrate it today, and I think everyone should go out and watch it. You've seen it, Rob?
Yeah, and it also has one of our former guests in it.
Exactly. So music and lyrics are by Danny Elfman, a great film scorer, and he actually sings the lead role, Jack, but in Oogie Boogie, one of the characters in the film is played by our good friend Ken Page, who was on our show. Oh gosh, Rob, when was it? Like a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
And Ken has actually, every time you've ever seen that character on video games, sequels, whatever, TV show, it's in the parks. It's all Ken. He's the only person who's voiced that character in the world. And I think that's kind of a cool, fun fact. So he is a part of this. So is the great Catherine O'Hara. I mean, I'm obsessed with Schitt's Creek. Who isn't? And who isn't obsessed with Catherine O'Hara? She was also, of course, in Beetlejuice, which is coming to Broadway. But Catherine O'Hara sings in this, and she plays one of the characters in it. Chris Sarandon's in it. I love that there was these theater connections within the film of the people who played these parts. But I got to say that it's the story. It's this, you know, you've all seen it probably before, but they sort of intersperse Halloween and Christmas, and there's a skeleton who has to go there, and they kidnap Santa Claus, and it's a great, fantastically dark PG story. And it's a musical, and the songs are incredible. And I just want to, you know, I wish that Danny Elfman had written a musical. Maybe he hasn't, I don't know, but he said it was one of the easiest scores that he ever written, and he pumped it out so fast because he feels like he really is that character Jack, he says. But I think that the songs are original, theatrical, fun. The show is a musical, and I think it's worth celebrating this Halloween season, Rob.
So here's the big question: could you adapt it to the stage?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think over the years it's been talked about. I think if you did, it would have to be almost like a Julie Taymor Lion King type of thing with puppetry, and I wouldn't want to see an Addams Family type version of it. I think it would have to be something that probably wouldn't easily translate to the regional theaters of the world, but it would be like a very – almost like a what was that? Shockhead Peter all those years ago? Just yeah. Like sort of like a real avant-garde sort of weird, funky situation. I think that's in order to capture the spirit of it, because it's Tim Burton, you know, and it's he you remember that MoMA exhibit where they did Tim Burton, all
oh,
of his
so
drawings?
Yeah.
It was wild. This man, I mean, this is based on a poem he wrote in the early 80s. And it's wild that I don't know that you would have to acknowledge that creativity in the musical, I guess. So I think that is an inherent challenge, because how do you do that, right? I mean, that's the part. That's the theory that I've always learned from you, Rob, is that if something's so famous as a film, you how do you make a musical of that? Because your memory is always going to be with the film. Did I say it right? I mean, that's what I remember. I picked up from you.
I mean, I think other people have said this too. I mean, my feeling is if the more cultish the musical, I mean the movie, the more chance you have of doing a successful musical version of it.
And Rocky Horror Picture Show, I guess that because it's so audience participatory, they sort of skirted that line a little bit when it was revived on Broadway in 2000. What was it, one or something, with, you know, Alice Ripley and
absolutely.
That was like sort of a hit, but it wasn't. That to me is not the same as doing Nightmare Before Christmas on stage. Like that would be different. But I would love to see some version of it again. God knows it's so
this
well
is
done.
Halloween.
It's so fun. Halloween. It's great. It's a good Halloween film. So in this week leading up to Halloween, I would I would go listen to the soundtrack or watch Nightmare Before Christmas.
That sounds like a great idea. And then after that, to cleanse your palate a little bit, head on over to the Overtures of Julie Stein.
Oh, volume gosh, I'm gonna one go listen to that.
It's called
that
Everything's
tomorrow.
Coming Up Roses, and volume two is called I'm the Greatest Star.
Can't wait.
And volume three is Yes, I Wrote the Red Shoes.
And Hazel Flagg.
Enough with the Hazel Flagg.
I know I'm hating on Hazel Flagg too much. I'm sorry. I'll go listen to it again. And
why?
And well,
what crime exactly have you committed?
It's been three times and I still can't sing a damn song from it. So I don't know.
every time I hear Hazel Flagg, I keep thinking of the maid Hazel, that TV show that they tried to make a musical.
But Helen sounds amazing on it. I will say she's awesome. She's fantastic on
it. When doesn't she sound amazing?
Exactly. Hello.
Hello, Helen.
All right.
Has she called you lately?
No.
Helen used to.
She used to call you.
She used to call me all the time. Helen was so sweet. I think this is a sweet story. When Kevin and I went back to do the interview the second time, we said, "Do you have any questions about anything?" Meaning the podcast. And she
we hoped.
And she said, "Yeah." She goes, "I can't get my remote to work." So. So Kevin and I showed her and her husband how the remote works. And then I said in passing, I said, if you need any more help, give me a call. Well, I think maybe we were out of there 2 hours and the phone rang again. How does the remote work again? So so luckily we helped Helen with her remote.
And she helped us by getting us two interviews.
Hey, listen, helping her with a remote is the least we can do for all we've done. Oh my God.
Go check out that interview. Yeah. What's up?
Really quickly. I forgot to tell you with Carol Cook yesterday.
Yeah.
I got to be in L.A., she was telling me that the first Tuesday of every month, Charlotte Ray organized a group, and it's all these, they call themselves the Old Broadway Broads, who like
what?
Get together in a restaurant and have lunch together. And it's like her and Joanne Worley and Karen Morrow and Nancy Dussault and a whole bunch of other people.
You got to go, Rob. You have to go.
I wasn't invited. And she goes, the one rule we have is people can't come up and talk to us. But I think I'm going to do like a Lucy thing. Like I'm going to stick on a fake mustache and like serve the food and just linger a little bit so I can hear everything.
That's a really good idea.
I think so too. Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I said to her, I said, so what do you talk about? And I thought it was going to be like, remember the good old days? And she goes, oh, honey. She goes, we all talk about the worst lay we ever had. Like who did you lay in show business that was really bad? And so I asked her, okay, now you need to help me out. I said to her, I said, so Carol, I said, did anyone say the same name? Did anyone be like, oh, I slept with him and he was horrible? Yeah. Someone go, oh, ask me. She said, oh yeah, honey. She says, but I'm not going to tell you. She says, I'll tell you this though. She goes, all those tenors. She goes, they're so square. She goes, if you're a tenor, you can't make love. So it's a tenor. That's all I know. I think I have an idea of who it is, but I don't want to say anything because I think he was married. So,
oh my gosh, amazing!
So we'll see. So if anyone knows who it is, we're looking for a tenor that was around in the golden age that apparently was not very good in bed. She's like, and they all think they're amazing. She goes, their voices go real hot. She goes, that doesn't translate to the bedroom, honey.
Oh my God!
So. We had a good time.
We leave you with that.
We leave you with that. Go. I'm going to go lick some stamps for fun. I'll talk to you later.
Hi, everybody.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.